and welcome to episode number 33 of The Fourth Wall. I'm, of course, your host, Griffin Schiller, and this is the show where we break down the fourth wall of the film industry as we get an inside look through our conversations with industry professionals ranging from writers, directors, actors, you name it. This show is, of course, part of the Playlist Podcast Network, where you can find the rest of our amazing film and television-centric catalog. Whatever your fix is, we definitely have you covered over there, so consider subscribing to the podcast feed. My guest today truly needs no introduction, because he is arguably the most popular filmmaker on the planet right now, with such a loyal fan base and such a distinct vision and style. And he's got a new film coming out on Netflix this Friday, and that film is Army of the Dead. And I am so privileged and honored to be able to say that I got to talk with Zack Snyder. Whether you love his films or you don't, I mean, there's no denying that Zack Snyder is one of the boldest, most unashamedly stylistic filmmakers of all time. I mean, ranging from Dawn of the Dead to Watchmen to 300, Man of Steel, Batman v Superman, he spent over 15 years bringing audiences some of what they crave most, which is genre thrills coated in glorious slow motion, top-tier special effects, and it makes a product so distinct. I mean, it's as though it was ripped out of the pages of a graphic novel. Every single frame of a Zack Snyder film can basically be hung up and framed on your wall. It's so beautiful. The man is unafraid of spectacle. That is no doubt. He loves a great epic story, but his critics seem to focus solely on that, almost ignoring his ability to successfully and effectively craft emotionally and thematically rich character stories, particularly when dealing with the notion of parenthood and family, which Army of the Dead does incredibly well. It is a very self-reflective observation and examination of fatherhood. But coming off of the tumultuous production of Justice League, which we're not going to get into here, and an immense personal tragedy, Snyder brings us his latest take on the zombie genre with his directorial hallmarks all over the place. Yet, they've been dialed back, and it's rather refreshing. It feels like a Zack Snyder movie, but there's also this tangible grittiness to it, almost filmed very guerrilla style, that I found to be incredibly effective and, you know, nice to see from him. The film is, of course, set in Las Vegas after the zombie apocalypse ravages the city, and only the city, and it stars Dave Bautista in an incredible role, probably Dave Bautista's best role to date, as this hard-edged mercenary who is leading a crew into Vegas to steal $200 million before the city goes up in a nuclear blast, partly so he can secure his future, but primarily so he can rebuild his relationship with his estranged daughter. But Army of the Dead is also a special film for Snyder, because he not only wrote and directed the project, but he got back behind the lens, serving as its director of photography and sole cameraman. And the end result, as I mentioned, is one of his most unique looking films. And it seems that Netflix is also very excited and very on board with the film, because Snyder is also working on at least two spin-offs that we know of, an animated series and a prequel film, which Snyder does get into throughout the course of this conversation. So you're going to want to keep listening for the details on that. But we don't just touch on that. We also touch on his long rumored and previously announced George Washington film, which sort of just like, it was announced and then it went away, and now he's sort of shed some light onto what happened with that, the prospects of a 300 part 3, which, you know, I'm a big 300 fan, so I want to see this 300 part 3, but some of the details that he gives regarding that is actually very interesting, and how the writing process turned that film into something completely different. He also touches a little bit on his upcoming King Arthur adaptation, you know, with him being a big fan of Excalibur. It's great to see him dive into a project like that, and especially with his, you know, knack for epic storytelling, it seems like an appropriate fit there. And then we just talk about the zombie genre in general, and just the effectiveness of it, and how to make zombies scary again this day and age. We go back to his work in commercials. I mean, it's a very extensive conversation with Zack Snyder, and we touch on as much as we possibly can with the time I was given with him, and I'm so thankful that I was able to have this conversation with him. I've been a big fan of his since I was growing up, And so being able to talk to a filmmaker like this, who's, you know, had an impact on my own life was really special. And I hope the conversation is as enjoyable for you all to listen to as it was for me to, you know, participate in. And so without further ado, let's get into this thing. Here is our conversation with Zack Snyder. I think the last time we spoke, it was really only briefly during like a roundtable for Justice League, and I asked you sort of about your process behind creating your openings, how you make them so like precise, detailed, and everything like that. And I kind of wanted to pick back up there because you promised that Army of the Dead was going to have like another kick-ass opening like that, and man, you, I mean, you delivered with that. You weren't joking, and I think it's probably one of your best ones to date.
Oh, cheers, appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. I kind of wanted to just sort of like talk about the process of creating that sequence for you and where the idea sort of came from.
Yeah, I guess I had, I'd been like, oh, well, I'll just do the like whole Fall of Vegas in the title sequence, so we don't have to worry about that. That was like a thing I just said.
Yeah.
Wasn't exactly sure how that would manifest itself, but like I was pretty, I remember Shay and I were right when we were writing the script. I was like, okay, so I'll just write like the weird little title sequence. So I just wrote it. It was pretty, it's frankly a pretty sketchy, the way I wrote it. It's pretty, I mean, there's details, but it's not crazy. But then I got to work when I went into this sort of drawing phase of the movie. I really kind of dug down and went for it as far as the title sequence is very, I mean, as far as the drawing of the sequence, it's, you know, it's kind of like, this is the level that I drew it at, you know, it's like,
oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, that's Scott and Cruz and that's soccer mom getting crushed by the,
oh, gotcha. Okay. Yeah. That's awesome. So,
anyway,
so
it was really carefully sort of drawn out at that point. And then I kind of knew how the pieces would fit together.
Yeah, so that's actually something I'm curious about, because I think you showed me some of the 300 ones the last time we spoke. How, like, is that the level of detail you go into when you're just sort of like mapping these things out, and then you give those to storyboard, and then they sort of take it from there?
No, that's it. That's what we shared.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was all. It kind of ends there for everybody, because if you look carefully at the drawings, everything's there. Sometimes there will be certain sequences, like if it's a huge action sequence, I may get like Jay or someone to help me draw that, you know, because a lot of posing and stuff. And I was like, okay, let's do that. And they're good. So, but yeah. Like this whole sequence, much like Watchmen or whatever, I just started and just drew the whole thing through.
Yeah. Well, that's immediately what kind of like came to mind was the opening for Watchmen, and like, not only just like the striking visuals, but just like how important the selection of music was. And like, obviously, you know, oh, it's the Fall of Vegas, use Viva Las Vegas, but you're not just using Viva Las Vegas, you're using like this particular version, and you're getting like, you know, it starts out really chaotic, and then as it sort of like progresses, it gets really like emotional and sorrowful. Like I've never heard that song I guess covered in a way like that before.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
Yeah,
Allison did the recording, Allison Crowe, who sings Hallelujah at the end of Justice League.
Yeah.
It's the same singer. But she and then Richard Cheese does the like opening, which is a bit of a callback to Dawn of the Dead, because he did, of course, the Down with the Sickness in that movie.
Yeah.
But there is this kind of cool reflexive quality too, because you know, he's acknowledging what he sees in a way, you know, like he's like, look out, Elvis, or kaboom.
Yeah.
So it's kind of fun, and kind of, that was the design, that it be kind of, you know, this is a romp, and it's just some zombie fun. And then it, you know, it kind of draws you in slowly, and then it's got you.
Yeah. I think it's just almost
it's sort
like
of a metaphor for the movie, John.
I was literally just about to say that. That's like a perfect encapsulation of just the film in general. You start out with like the zombie mayhem and the blood, but like there's, you know, at least what resonated most with me was like how deep and, you know, personal it sort of was, especially with the characters. And I don't know, maybe I was reading a little bit too much into it, but I saw a lot of
you inside the character of Scott. It almost felt a little bit self-reflective. I don't know if that was that was true or not, but
absolutely. I mean, I think that, like, you know, yeah, there was a lot. I mean, we, you know, I wrote most of that father-daughter stuff, and yeah, you just, I mean, you can't help but like make it kind of personal. So.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. But and not only just in terms of the storytelling, but I don't know, like even in terms of the production, it just felt like this was like almost the perfect. It was a little bit of catharsis for you. Just I have to imagine going from, you know, your time in like the massive, you know, studio big budget movies, going to something like this that feels a little bit more back to your roots. I mean, you're not only writing and directing, you're the DP on the film as well. There's a lot of practical effects. I don't know. Was it just, can you talk a little bit about that experience and maybe how, maybe why that was the perfect place to pick up after the studio stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, you know, the abstraction of filmmaking had become problematic. You know, there was like, you know, we had reached a critical mass with the, scale of the movies. It had gone, you know, kind of into the stratosphere, and yeah. I just felt like this was an opportunity to sort of recapture a bit of the why of making a movie. And yeah, that's kind of, that was probably, that's what had to do with my decision to shoot the film to be as well, was that kind of need to kind of restore that, you know, the joy of filmmaking. And I think that, and I did absolutely had that experience making the movie. It was a blast. And my crew was amazing. I had just a great time overall.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the why of it.
Yeah. Well, I guess acting as the DP, I guess what were some of the, because this is the first time you've done something like that. Obviously, I mean, I have to imagine you've shot stuff before, but like doing a full film like this, what was the biggest obstacle you had to overcome? And then what did you sort of learn from collaborating with like the great DPs, like someone like Larry Fong or something like that?
Yeah.
Which actually, yeah. By the way, I loved the Larry Fong Easter egg in the film as well. Yeah.
I was a director cameraman for about 10 years in commercials. I've shot hundreds of TV commercials myself, and I really, that part of it, I'm pretty comfortable with it.
Right.
I know the gear and I know how to do it. And yes, I've learned a ton from Larry, and, you know, he's a genius, and I love working with him. You know, he's kind and patient with me, and I'm pretty specific about what I want to film. So he gives me a lot of indulgences. But then when it came time to shoot the movie, you know, I just had a very, I had a real particular point of view on how to shoot it. And I think that's, you know, what we ended up with was, I think, you know, something pretty unique and kind of crazy, but really, it was really fun to shoot. And again, it just reinserted me into the process in a way that made me super excited. I mean, I was like, you know, when you shoot the physics, and not only was it the DP, but I was operating the camera.
Yeah.
It's really immersive motion picture experience.
Yeah. I guess, how does that sort of, when you're balancing that with directing, I guess, is that just like a, I have to imagine that is just like an absolute rush when you're on set. I mean, and not even just like, you know, being a DP, like you said, actually operating the camera and then like going from that to like directing the actors, and it's just like constant movement, you know?
Yeah, you're like, the days went by fast. Let me put it that way.
Yeah,
like there's no sitting down. There's no, I was like, I banned chairs from the set. I was like, no chairs, no one sits, like we don't sit. Yeah. So, you know, but the nice thing is like, it's really intimate, you know? So like if you're filming, you know, you can just like, I can just talk to the actors right there. Like, I'm not back at a monitor across the room. I'm like right there. I'm just like, listen, you should probably try and like, you know, just turn a little bit more or whatever. And then, or like be a little bit more, emotion, I don't know, whatever the director, who knows what I'm saying, but the actors were like, oh, thanks. You know, that's great. You know, because it was really instantaneous.
Yeah. So do you think that in hindsight, maybe it was more beneficial to the performances and just the overall, like that sort of thing?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It was definitely the most purely engaged I've been, you know, making a movie. Like there was like nothing for me but this, what was right in front of me, you know?
Yeah.
And it was fun, but it was really like a blast, like I say.
Yeah, well, I mean, that comes through like immediately the second the movie starts. You're just like, okay, this is, yeah, I can tell that everyone involved had a really good time making this movie. So you mentioned that you worked in commercials for a little bit. I actually want to go back to when you first started out as a filmmaker, because you know, you came up in an era where, you know, so many prominent directors like Michael Bay or like David Fincher, that so many of them got their start in commercials. And it was sort of like back in that era, it was like, if you proved yourself then you would eventually sort of like rise through the ranks, then studios might tap you for projects. And there was almost like obviously it's not an absolute, but there was almost like a trajectory for how you could become a director. And I'm sort of curious, like how you look back at that time and like how those experiences and that journey sort of shaped you, and then what you think of how that's sort of changed today, because that is absolutely not the case in today's landscape.
Yeah, using the commercial trajectory to get into movies is not really happening. By the way, when I first went to film school, there was the, you could get a movie off a movie that you made in school, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there was always that kind of conversation, but that's like a one-shot deal, right? Like you're kind of taking a hard swing.
Yeah.
And so I opted for the like version where I made a bunch of commercials and I made put a reel together. And, you know, I interviewed at a bunch of production companies and I got signed by a company called at the time it was called The End, and now it's Believe Media. Same company I'm with now, right out of college. I was, you know, literally right out of, I was in school still.
Yeah.
I didn't finish my master's cause I just left and went to work. And so that was cool, but, maybe one day, and so it did equip me for, you know, any possible scenario. I mean, literally I've shot who knows how many TV commercials, hundreds and every possible scenario, whether it be like, and I was known at the time, weirdly, for shooting a lot of I was like a location guy, 100%, like big images shot on location out somewhere in the edge of the world.
Yeah.
So I traveled all over Papua New Guinea, Australia, South Africa, Namibia, Morocco, all over Europe, you know, Iceland a bunch of times, just everywhere.
And
so that was kind of my thing. That's what I was kind of known for. And then, but my reel was big and it looked awesome. And they were like, okay, you know, and that's all mostly stuff I shot myself, you know, that's how I got a movie.
Yeah, for sure. Well, it's interesting how you, like some of the things you sort of learn from working in, I guess like advertising or stuff like that. Cause I even heard, I think I was listening to an interview where, Debbie, your wife mentioned, that you guys like to be hands-on with the marketing and the advertising when it comes to your own movies. And I wonder, and I have to assume that's also because of both of your backgrounds in advertising.
Yeah. I remember when we did Dawn of the Dead, I said to the marketing guys, I'm like, guys, you want my input like on this, I promise.
Yeah.
Like on the trailer, I go, let's just put it this way. If you came to me and I hadn't made this movie, I would say no. To you, like you wouldn't be able to afford me, and two, I'd say no. So like I'm free, like, you know, let's go.
Yeah.
So I had a lot to say about those, and I always have a lot to say about the trailers and the marketing and all that, because I just frankly I know that stuff, you know.
Yeah, right. I mean, you spend so much time in that department. I have to imagine it's almost like difficult for you not to just like cut the trailer yourself, you know. Well, I guess you got to do that with Justice League, but like, you know, usually.
But almost every trailer I've worked on in my entire career, I've had a pretty strong hand in guiding, you know.
Yeah.
Normally, the way we do it is Jen Horvath comes. She's cut so many of my trailers, and I just put her in editorial. In my editorial, and she's just in down the hall from me, you know. Yeah. Just go in there, and normally there's kind of like a, the way it works in movies a lot is there's like a, and it, you know, it still does, but like a lot of times there's just like a bidding, like there's a bunch of, they make a bunch of trailers at the same time, and then you decide which one's the best. Mm-hmm. And we've done that some, but a lot of times I'm just like, Jen and I are going to cut the trailer, it's going to be awesome. So
Yeah, well, and I'm sure out of all of them, that's the one that you guys usually end up going with. So
99% of the time.
Yeah, for sure. I do want to kind of,
every time then there's a curveball. Like I'll go like, what the hell? That's amazing.
Yeah, right. It's like, oh, I didn't even consider that before.
No, I'm not afraid to say something's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. So I kind of want to go into, you know, some of your other past works that you've done. And I think the film that first introduced me to your work was 300. I watched it in a Latin class in like, I don't even remember, but maybe like high school or something like that. And because we were talking about mythology and whatnot. And so ever since then, I've been a massive fan of just that movie, the visual style. And I was even a big fan of the sequel as well. And I remember that I remember hearing that you guys were working on a part three, but I guess it just never sort of came together. Is that like still something you're interested in continuing to sort of like finish up that story, or is,
you know, I got on a, you know, well, we did talk about it a lot. We were,
yeah,
this, there was a whole bunch of different iterations for 300 part three. And who knows, maybe there will be still. I just kind of, you know, couldn't really get my teeth into it.
Mm.
Therefore, you know, I did over the pandemic, I had a deal with Warner Brothers, and I wrote, which was essentially going to be an the final chapter in 300. But when I sat down to write it, I actually wrote a different movie.
So, oh, wow.
It's just like, you know how, like, I just sat down, I was writing this thing about Alexander the Great, and it just turned into a movie about the relationship between Hephaestion and Alexander the Great.
Hmm.
And it's turned out to be a relationship, like a love story.
Yeah.
And that's what I ended up writing. I didn't mean to. So it really didn't fit in the 300 as the third movie.
Right.
But you know, there was that concept, and it came out really great. It's called Blood and Ashes, and it's really like a beautiful, it's a love story, really, in the end.
Interesting.
With warfare.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask, is that something that's like you're in the process of working on? Like, obviously you wrote the script, but is it
going to get? I would love to do it. Warner's doesn't want to do it.
Okay. Gotcha.
They're not like, you know, they're not huge fans of mine. It is what it is.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that actually just reminded me, because I remember there was another, I guess, 300-esque kind of movie. I remember hearing like years and years ago about like George Washington and like the crossing of the Delaware River or something like that. Is that something that you're still interested in making? Because the concept of that just sounded absolutely fascinating to me. And we don't get a whole lot of Revolutionary War films these days. So
yeah, I talked about my buddy and I had been thinking about doing a George Washington movie that was all about, you know, that whole time from after he leaves New York to crossing the Delaware, and the battle with the Hessians, and that whole,
okay.
Cause it kind of turned the tide. Like, they were pretty much done at that point. You know, there was not a lot of, it was like, if that hadn't worked out, the Battle of Trenton, if that hadn't worked out, that was pretty much the end of the line. Mm-hmm. So really a pivotal battle. So, you know, we talked a lot about doing that movie. They did there's a lot of cool things that they did there, and a lot of cool sort of mystic, mythological things that we were going to mess around with. But
oh,
you know, it just, we got to kind of both kind of get busy, but it's a thing. I love it. It's a cool world.
That's fascinating. Yeah, I don't even know how you would incorporate like mysticism in something like that. But I don't know. You always find a way to
we
just
did the
like
research. It's pretty yeah. cool. There's some pretty cool things, you know, like with just kind of like with the Masons, and there's like a lot of craziness.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. That's a good point. The Masons, and I guess all the sort of yeah, the stuff that comes with them and the conspiracy theories and stuff. Yeah.
But you know, it's all fun.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. And then I guess now you're also, well, I don't know. I guess you're in the process of tackling Excalibur, right? Or the
well,
King
I'm writing
Arthur?
A. Here's what I'm writing. I wrote like a. I'm writing right now. I'm in the process of writing a kind of a. Basically, it's just like a retelling of Excalibur, like of the Arthurian legend.
Yeah, yeah.
That's sort of set, you know, in a different place. I don't know if they've said it, but it's. It's like a, you know, like a kind of like in the, you know, in the sort of gold rush era of America, kind of weird Arthurian. But anyway, it's cool. And I really, I'm really kind of into it, and it's fun. And it's like, you know, it's kind of crazy. But, you know, that, and then I have this other giant thing I'm trying to do with Netflix right now.
Yeah, right. Well, and then you're also sort of like expanding on the Army of the Dead, I guess, sort of like universe. I mean, you have like spinoffs and stuff in the works. I mean, you already shot one, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Well, we're in the middle of the animated series, and we have the Matthias shot a movie that Shay and I came up with. Shay wrote the script, and he and I wrote the story, and we produced it, of course.
Mm-hmm.
About Dieter's character in Germany and why he's obsessed with the Götterdämmerung and the other Ring Cycle safes. And you realize that he's like a weird safe dork. It's kind of a romantic comedy about him being kind of like him being drawn into this international crime syndicate that want to use him to crack these incredible safes that are all over Europe.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I mean, he's a character that I think fans and just audiences are going to fall in love with, because he I mean, my God, he was just a scene stealer and every single sequence that he was in, just the timing, the awkwardness, it was great. It was great.
Yeah, and by the way, it's more of that in the movie that he made.
Oh yeah? Yeah. Okay. Good. So fans of his can definitely look forward to seeing more of that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The movie's really fun too, by the way. It's really cute.
Awesome. Well, and I guess that'll be a nice sort of like compliment to like the, I guess the more grand scale version of what we're getting with Army.
I mean, and surprisingly, I'm not gonna say how much the movie was. It was a pretty low budget movie that they made in Europe, but it's pretty big feeling. It's like
wow,
they go to all these all over Europe, and they're being chased by Interpol, and it's like
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. So I guess when you're going back to something like the zombie genre, right? Which is we've seen so many different iterations over the years. I mean, it's been around since like the beginning of cinema. It's like there's already like a big challenge in trying to make that scary again for a modern audience, especially when we have shows like, you know, the Walking Dead, where it's like they're just sort of like background noise at this point.
Yeah.
And I think you were really able to do that, especially through Zeus, who, I mean, just by the silhouette of him just in like the corner of a room or whatever, I mean, just was so imposing, so terrifying. I don't know how you were able to do it, but you were able to make zombies terrifying again in a way that I haven't seen in like years.
Yeah, and I think it's like, well, first of all, Rich is amazing and a great actor and
yeah.
to be around, and he's been in every movie I've made, so it's always a joy to have Rich on set. But beyond that, I think if there is a beyond that, but beyond that, I think the idea was, you know, that their kind of just shadowy humanity makes them even kind of scarier.
Mm.
Just mindless killing machines, you know?
Yeah. 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 That's true. Yeah. I do want to sort of talk about, and maybe this is a little bit of a, I don't want to say it's a pedestrian question, but I have just always been like fascinated with your style, right? Like how, like the origin of that, how you came to adopt that, like how you sort of like tinkered and tweaked it over the years, because it is so distinct to you as a storyteller, and it is really effective. And I'm sort of curious, just like how, like why do you think it works for you, and then why do you continue to come back to that?
Well, first of all, I don't analyze it very hard, you know, as far as it all comes from the drawings in a lot of ways. I just I make the shots in the drawings. And then when I go film it, it's really just instinctive to me, like how to see it, how to see the scenes and stuff. And they're very particular. Like, you know, I would say, like, for instance, this movie, I'm super happy to shoot a bunch of slow motion. I have no issue. People are always like, you're the slow motion guy. Like, okay. Mm-hmm. But you know, the truth is, like, this movie doesn't have that much slow motion in it.
No, not really.
I haven't had that much slow motion in the movies I've made for the last, like, well, you know, since after Sucker Punch, probably, right?
Yeah.
Sucker Punch was kind of the last movie that had like a ton of slow motion in it. You know, Man of Steel had zero.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And Batman vs Superman, I think, had zero. And so, you know, which is cool. And like I say, I have no issue. Justice League got a bunch of slow motion, but I didn't care. Yeah, it's just like, look, there's money falling from the sky and you're shooting a machine gun. Probably should be slow motion shot.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it's all instinctive. Yeah, for sure.
You don't really have to be like a, I don't know. That doesn't take a lot of work to get to that one, I don't think.
Yeah, for sure.
We're going to do the shot, and like these, they're in a casino, zombies anywhere. Somehow there's money falling from the ceiling all around them like a snowstorm. You'd be probably like, slow motion, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it's interesting just how much of that is instinctive, because I don't know. I always, at least in my mind, you know, just watching these, I'm like, oh my gosh, the planning that must go into some of these, especially in something like 300, right? Where it's like, there's like so much of it. And it's like, it's really, it really works for the fight sequences. But
that movie, we did do a ton of R&D on, you know.
Oh, okay.
That was a very carefully made. The camera rigs, everything we had to invent, you know, for that was insane. But Army is like, you know, I guess maybe where it comes from is I do love sort of like iconographic images. I like these, like an image that would just stand, you know, it doesn't need the movie. I find that really fun, you know, and that's probably why I like the trailer so much, because it just like shot after shot that you're just like, wait, what?
Yeah, that's a great point.
And I think that, so that, I do have fun making those kinds of shots. I know when they're coming too. I'll be like, all right, get ready, everyone, just go in the movie, in the trailer.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you could tell, it's like, holy shit, like that's insanity.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I guess I do have to start wrapping up here in a second, but I will give you, I just one final question here. So, something that I love about you as a filmmaker, aside from just how candid you are, how honest you are, is how engaged you are with your fans. I mean, it really goes beyond just like the bare minimum. You know, you'll have hour long conversations with them about your work, and you'll answer, you know, most all of their questions. When it comes to actually breaking down your films in depth, I'm sort of curious what your philosophy is when you're discussing the subtext, the allusions, or the deeper meanings with those fans. Because I know quite a few filmmakers, they don't like to do that, right? They refuse to interpret their films for an audience or validate certain readings. But you're pretty willing to do that, and I'm sort of curious why that is.
I just think that, well, frankly, for me, we do a lot of, when I'm making the movie, spend a lot of time, you know, on the layering of the movie, trying to make sure that it works on multiple layers at the same time, that it has this meaning and that meaning, and that I'm always slipping Easter eggs in as much as I can. So, like, it's a thing I am working on constantly. So, it'd be great. So, to not acknowledge it seems rude,
right?
You know, because frankly, it's a lot of work to watch these movies over and over and kind of analyze it and get to the why of it. And so it seems fair if someone's going to put that effort in that I would also be able to, you know, go down that same rabbit hole and have that same conversation.
Yeah, for sure. Well, that's
by the way, it's fun.
Well, yeah, obviously, getting the multiple interpretations too, something that maybe you never thought of before as well.
Yeah, plenty of things I'm like, what? Oh yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I do have to wrap now, but listen, Zach, it's been an absolute pleasure. I've really enjoyed chatting with you. I've always been a fan of your movies, always been a big supporter. So I'm glad to see you, have a great movie come out with Army of the Dead. And just, I can't wait for audiences to see it.
Thank you so much.
Well, there you have it, guys. That was my conversation with director Zack Snyder. I am seriously so thankful that I was able to have that opportunity. He is an absolute great, genuine guy, straight shooter. I love how candid he is, how honest he is, and the remarkable relationship that he has fostered with his fans. I mean, it's not something that you see a lot with filmmakers. He's truly one of a kind. But the most important thing is Army of the Dead is currently playing in select theaters. And I can't recommend seeing that film enough on the big screen. It's exactly what it was made for. But, you know, if you don't feel comfortable doing so, or if it's not playing in your area, it also debuts on streaming on Netflix this Friday, May 21st. So definitely give it a watch. It's one of his best films for sure. Be sure, as always, though, guys, to subscribe to the Playlist Podcast Network so you don't miss out on more episodes of The Fourth Wall, the Playlist Podcast, the Discourse, Be Real, so much more. Whatever your fix is, we definitely have you covered over there. And if you want to go the extra step and really help us out, it would be amazing if you left us a rating and a review because it greatly helps the show out. It allows me to know what you're all loving and what you want to see more of. I don't have a guest lined up for my next episode just yet, but you know, as always, when I do, I'll be back to you all with another episode. But until then, guys, thank you so much for listening. If you like me specifically and you like what I have to say, you can give me a follow on Twitter at Griff Schiller. All right, that's going to do it for this episode, and I will catch you guys next time. Take care.